Joining me now, Dr. William Parker, PhD, CEO and President of the East West Institute. And as I said earlier, Bill has a PhD in biological defense from George Mason University, his master's from Harvard in government from the JFK School of Government, and was the former chief of war plans at the Pentagon. His PhD work was focused on planning for a pandemic and combining those areas, the clinical area of epidemiology and the strategic planning needed to deal with these events. That's one of the reasons why Bill is here today and so much more with the work that you do at East West, Bill, to deal with these, you know, various government structures, entities, not only in this country, but around the world. And at this time, we need the right people speaking to the American people.
David, you're absolutely right on that. And it's great to be back on your show. The fact that you're bringing on Dr. Fauci and others to have these discussions speaks highly of your show. But let's jump it right into this. I mean, as you know, as of yesterday, about 165,000 cases, about 6,500 deaths worldwide. That number, sadly, is going to grow, and it's going to grow significantly here. But there are some actions and things we can do to prevent the significant spread of this, and some of those actions are being taken, and some of them aren't. It is important to realize that the last time the world responded to a global emergency for disease at this level was the 1918 and 1919 H1N1 influenza pandemic. So this is a very significant event that we haven't seen for about 100 years, but we have seen many significant pandemic and epidemiological events over the last 20 to 30 years. And this is just another one of those, but this one has to be dealt with in a different way because of the spread, like I said, to 146 plus countries and how fast this is spreading from human to human. That originally started from animal to human and now is also being transmitted from inanimate objects to humans. That this is all important, and we got to get after this quickly.
Well, let's start from the global perspective and work our way inward, Bill, if you can, with the WHO declaring Europe as now a center of this pandemic spread. Where is Europe today? We've seen news come out about Spain basically, you know, garnering, taking control of all their private healthcare facilities, anything that's available to deal with this. We see Italy, we see France, which looks like it is going to have a spike in reporting its numbers. So where is Europe and what does that mean for the United States?
Well, it's very interesting as you're seeing this transition from originally China, now in Europe, where the epicenter is. But the reality is you cannot say Europe in itself is dealing with this issue in one way. The United Kingdom is dealing with it very differently than Italy is dealing with this issue. And the reality is right now there is not one international effort focused on saying this is the way that we as a globe are going to do this. World Health Organization is working on that. But the reality is each country is kind of locking down now and determining how they are going to do it. The question is, do you need to have a continuity of operations plan put in place that looks at issues and efforts from an international level and then from national, then state and local, and then individual levels? And I think the answer to that is yes, but they all have to be aligned. You're starting to see in the United States that we are coming together not only as a government, but as individuals as well. And you're starting to see corporations that are coming in saying, you know what, we're not going to make perfumes anymore. We're going to make hand sanitizers. We're going to find out ways to pump out more surgical masks and gloves and these types of things. We're going to find other creative ways to look at hospitalization. For example, you have two very large hospitals that happen to be on ships that the United States Navy owns, the Comfort and the Mercy. These are two, at one point, were two of the largest hospitals in the world. They're still very capable. Now you have to have the people to man those. But the reality is you do have the beds and you have a lot of equipment. Additionally, you have a lot of these ships right now that were being used to take people, you know, Carnival Cruise, et cetera, to take people around and enjoy very nice vacations. Well, maybe it's time to look at transitioning some of those to hospital ships. Not that difficult to do. Where you get into more of a conflict in a difficult situation is the elderly and those whose immune systems are compromised, because you, one, need to protect them, and we want them to live a very long, healthy life. On the other side, we need to make sure that we're not passing the disease to them from people who are trying to do their best to take care of these elderly individuals.
You know, Bill, to the point of strategic planning, because I want to focus on your skill set as well. You know, you've got, you know, the areas of epidemiology, how we deal with this, the strategic planning needed between governments, state entities, not just in Europe, but here in the United States. Are we in line with your experience, and are there things we need to do better?
You know, we're working hard at it. You just heard the president talking about a whole of nation, not only a whole of government, but a whole of nation effort here, where you're bringing in corporations, where you're bringing in the civilian sector, the private sector, the military, et cetera. And that's great news. And we need to continue that effort. International efforts could be better, quite frankly, and we need to work that. There are temporary hospitals that we have, that the Air Force has, that other organizations have, that we have used in the past. I was talking to the former chief of staff of the Air Force, Buzz Mosley, just the other day about this, and the fact that we have this capability in the Air Force to move these hospitals around. So that's another one of the capabilities. But as we look forward, I think it's very important to say, what is going to happen on that day when we have either defeated this or significantly reduced the threat of this virus, and we look around and say, now what? In other words, how do we ensure that the economy comes back? What is going to be the change in the workforce? Are we going to find that large corporations say, you know what, I reduced by a large percentage and I don't need 100% of the workers I have. I can do this at 80%. Are we going to see a reduction in the number of office spaces that are being rented in cities like New York and around the globe? Are we going to see more work from home scenarios? And I think all these are important to start considering now, so that when we defeat this, and we will, that we have a plan in place.
You know, from the Pentagon level, and this is, you know, a place where, again, I want to talk from that level with you, as the former chief of war plans, I've had the questions on this show, you know, what about our military? You know, clearly the other challenges around the world, our strategic competitors and our enemies, still exist. And, you know, whether in the Middle East or other areas, they still have their goals.
They do still have their goals. As I was starting to say before the president came on, and that's a good person to be interrupted by, but before he came on, one of the things I was saying was, we need to make sure that we take care of the military, take care of our first responders, healthcare providers, et cetera, because if we start losing them for health issues, then this grows again logarithmically or at least exponentially, because we don't have those healthcare providers or the military or logisticians, et cetera, to take care of those people. So that's important to take care of them first. There are other threats out there for sure, you know, and there are other conflicts going on. You know, at East West Institute, we continue to work issues with the United States and Russia, with the United States and China. We're working issues between the Saudis and the Iranians. We are working issues with the Middle East and North Africa across the board. We're working issues with the Balkans. And those need to continue, and they are continuing now. It's a little more complicated to do that, but we continue to have conversations throughout the week, regularly here, mostly by phone and video teleconference. The other threat that you have, that the bad guys, whoever they are looking at this right now saying, okay, there is a single disease, and you and I have talked about this numerous times. My last book, Guaranteeing America's Security in the 21st Century, talks about the fact that the number one threat to the U.S. being the big boy on the block is some sort of bio event. Now, we spend 50 pages talking about the bio event that could happen and how it could take the U.S. or other great nations to their knees. And we're starting to see that right now of the impact. Now, we'll come back because we're a strong country, but it's a major threat. So you could look at the future and say, there's a reality here that now threats, whether they're terrorists or smaller nations, et cetera, are saying, okay, the bio threat is a significant and sometimes cheap way to take down an otherwise superpower. And we need to really look at this bio threat, not just from a healthcare perspective, but from a military perspective as we move forward.
You know, on that, on that note, Bill, there are some weaker, maybe call it more vulnerable nations out there, and this effect can take them down significantly. And, you know, whether that's, we don't want to see it happen in a European nation, maybe it's in Italy, is Spain, which is now facing numerous challenges, Greece has got certain concerns and weaknesses. So what about that? Could this virus take down, and who are possibly some of the weaker nations that could either fail or be significantly affected by this?
Well, it certainly could, but I will tell you that what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing happening right now is the United States in particular is reaching out, not just to our friends and allies, but really around the globe, and offering at least the intelligence and the science that we have to say, this is how you can get after this disease. And it's not just the United States. I mean, South Koreans did a very good job of coming up with a testing kit very quickly. The Japanese did the same thing. Singapore did a very good job of testing early on. So we can learn from them as well on these types of issues. But if we share this science, we'll get after this threat. And I think it will help defeat future threats. I mean, we can't keep repeating this. You know, like I said, 100 years ago, you had the Black Plague, but then you also have Ebola, you had avian influenza, you had the swine flu. It's one after the other. Look at the last four presidents of the United States, and each one of them have dealt with some kind of major virus or viral issue. And here we are again. Now, this one's much more significant, but we keep dealing with this over and over again. We need to find a way to be able to respond quicker. The last thing is, if you look, every year there's a report put out. It's called 20 and whatever the year is, so 2018 ready or not reports. And it says whether or not we're ready for a bio event. That's what the whole study is about. When you go in and look at it, I think we will probably reassess whether or not that the assessment of our ability to respond to these types of threats was properly done.
Well, there is certainly a lot more to learn, and we do need to learn from these events and how we go forward. This administration has taken, a whole government and private sector approach. The cooperation with other nations is a lot better than being reported out there. And this is a good time for us to learn and move forward. But Bill, a quick question to you as we run low on time here. Iran and the Middle East, you mentioned Saudi earlier, Israel instituting quarantines for those coming in, but also working heavily in their biotechnology sector and their medical sector. But what about Iran?
Yeah, so Iran actually has a large number of very good doctors. I mean, you know, remember before the fall of the Shah, we were actually very close to the Iranians, and they had a lot of doctors that were actually trained in the United States and throughout Europe. So they still have a pretty good capability of that, but they have major issues going on right now. We're hoping that this is an opportunity where we can reach out to some of these countries where there have been other conflicts before and perhaps provide help to the population to show that we are better off working together than being adversaries. And so this is one of those opportunities that we're trying to reach out to Iran and other countries to say, let's work together on these issues and step aside from these other conflicts from the past.
Well, my friend, I really do appreciate it. I know that you're very busy with the folks over there at East-West Institute. And even in this time with a lot of remote work, you guys are doing the work to help not only the United States, but those around the world in dealing with the coronavirus outbreak. And, Bill, a good time to remind the audience that Guaranteeing America's Security in the 21st Century is a must-read. It is a must-read. I rarely say that to this audience, but it is a must-read for you to understand the complexities of our security as a nation and as a globe. And, Bill, it is a course that I, you know, enjoy working my way through. Thank you for all the work that you do, and thanks for following through on this. We'll be talking again soon.
Okay, thank you very much, David.
Dr. Bill Parker, the president and CEO of the East-West Institute.